The tide had swept the beach smooth and firm, and no other feet had marked it this early. David ran smoothly, long strides leaving damp footsteps in a chain behind him. The sun came up, casting a soft pink sheen on the sea and touching the Otaniqua Mountains with flame. But David ran unseeing. His thoughts were on the impending interview with his guardian. It was a time of crisis in his life. High school completed and many roads open. He knew the one he had chosen would draw violent opposition, and he used these last few hours of solitude to gather and strengthen his resolve. A conclave of gulls, gathered about the body of a stranded fish, rose in cloud as he ran towards them, their wings catching the low sun as they hovered, then dropped again when he passed. He saw the leer coming before he heard it. It was low against the dawn, rising and dropping over the towering bulk of the Rohbach. Then, swiftly coming in on muted shriek, it streaked low along the beach towards him. David stopped, breathing lightly even after the long run, and raised both arms above his head in salute. He saw Barney's head through the Perspex canopy turned towards him, the flash of his teeth as he grinned, and the hand raised, returning his salute as he went by. The leer turned out to sea, one wingtip almost touching the wave crest, and it came back at him. David stood on the exposed beach and steeled himself as the long, sleek nose dropped lower and lower, aimed like a javelin at him. Like some fearsome predatory bird, it swooped at him, and at the last possible instant, David's nerve broke, and he flung himself onto the wet sand. The jet blast lashed him as the leer rose and turned inland for the airfield. "Son of a bitch," muttered David, as he stood up, brushing damp sand from his bare chest, and imagined Barney's amused chuckle. "I taught him good," thought Barney, sprawled in the co-pilot's seat of the leer, as he watched David ride the delicate line of altitude where skill gave way to chance. Barney had put on weight since he had been eating Morgan bread, and his paunch peaked shyly over his belt. The beginning of jowls bracketed the wide, downturned mouth that gave him the air of a disgruntled toad, and the cap of hair that covered his skull was sparser and speckled with salt. Watching David fly, he felt the small warmth of his affection for him that his sour expression belied. 3 years he had been chief pilot of the Morgan Group, and he knew well to whose intervention he owed the post. It was security he had now, and prestige. He flew great men in the most luxuriously fitted machines, and when the time came for him to go out to pasture, he knew the grazing would be lush. The Morgan Group looked after its own. This knowledge sat comfortably on his stomach as he watched his protégé handle the jet. Extended low flying like this required enormous concentration, and Barney watched in vain for any relaxation of it in his pupil. The long, golden beaches of Africa streamed steadily beneath them, punctuated by rock promontories and tiny resorts and fishing villages. Delicately, the leer followed the contours of the coastline, for they had spurned the direct route for the exhilaration of this flight. Ahead of them stretched another strip of beach, but as they howled low along it, they saw that this one was occupied. A pair of tiny feminine figures left the frothy surf and ran panic-stricken to where towels and discarded bikinis lay above the high water mark. White buttocks contrasted sharply with a coffee-brown tan, and they laughed delightedly. "Nice change for you to see them running away, David," Barney grinned as they left the tiny figures far behind and bore onwards into the south. From Cape Orgullis they turned inland, climbing steeply over the mountain ranges. Then David eased back on the throttles and they sank down beyond the crests towards the city, nestling under its mountain. As they walked side by side towards the hangar, Barney looked up at David, who now topped him by 6 inches. "Don't let him stampede you, boy," he warned. "You've made your decision. See you stick to it." David took his British Racing Green MG over Duval Drive and from the lower slopes of the mountain looked down to where the Morgan building stood four square amongst the other tall monuments to power and wealth. David enjoyed its appearance, clean and functional, like an aircraft's wing. But he knew that the soaring freedom of its lines was deceptive. It was a prison and fortress. He swung off the freeway at an interchange and rode down to the foreshore, glancing up at the towering bulk of the Morgan building again, before entering the ramp that led to the underground garages beneath it. When he entered the executive apartments on the top floor, he passed along the row of desks where the secretaries, hand-picked for their looks as well as their skill with a typewriter, sat in a long row. Their lovely faces opened into smiles, like a garden of exotic blooms, as David greeted each of them. Within the Morgan building, he was treated with the respect due the heir apparent. Martha Goodrich, in her own office that guarded the inner sanctum, looked up from her typewriter, severe and businesslike. "Good morning, Mr. David. Your uncle is waiting, and I do think you could have worn a suit."
"You're looking good, Martha. You've lost weight, and I like your hair like that."
It worked, as it always did. Her expression softened. "Don't you try buttering me up," she warned him primly. "I'm not one of your floozies." Paul Morgan was at the picture window, looking down over the city spread below him like a map, but he turned quickly to greet David.
"Hello, Uncle Paul. I'm sorry I didn't have time to change. I thought it best to come directly."
"That's fine, David." Paul Morgan flicked his eyes over David's floral shirt, open to the navel, the wide, tooled leather belt, white slacks and open sandals. On him they looked good, Paul admitted reluctantly. The boy wore even the most outlandish modern clothes with a furious grace.
"It's good to see you."
Paul smoothed the lapels of his own dark, conservatively cut suit and looked up at his nephew. "Come in, sit down there, the chair by the fireplace." As always, he found that David's standing emphasized his own lack of stature. Paul was short and heavily built in the shoulders, thick muscular neck and square thrusting head. Like his daughter, his hair was coarse and wiry, and his features squashed and pug-like. All the Morgans were built that way. It was the proper course of things, and David's exotic appearance was outside the natural order. It was from his mother's side, of course. All that dark hair and flashing eyes, and the temperament that went with it.
"Well, David, first off, I want to congratulate you on your final results. I was most gratified,"
Paul Morgan told him gravely. And he could have added, "I was also mightily relieved." David Morgan's scholastic career had been a tempestuous affair. Pinnacles of achievement followed immediately by depths of disgrace, from which only the Morgan name and wealth had rescued him. There had been the business with the games master's young wife. Paul never did find out the truth of the matter, but had thought it sufficient to smooth it over by donating a new organ to the school chapel and arranging a teaching scholarship for the games master to a foreign university. Immediately thereafter, David had won the coveted Vessels Prize for Mathematics, and all was forgiven, until he decided to test his housemaster's new sports car, without that gentleman's knowledge, and took it into a tight bend at 90 miles an hour. The car was unequal to the test, and David picked himself up out of the wreckage and limped away with a nasty scratch on his calf. It had taken all Paul Morgan's weight to have the housemaster agree not to cancel David's appointment as head of house. His prejudices had finally been overcome by the replacement of his wrecked car with a more expensive model, and the Morgan Group had made a grant to rebuild the ablution block of East House. The boy was wild. Paul knew it well. But he knew also that he could tame him. Once he had done that, he would have forged a razor-edged tool. He possessed all the attributes that Paul Morgan wanted in his successor, the verve and confidence, the bright, quick mind and adventurous spirit. But above all, he possessed the aggressive attitude, the urge to compete that Paul defined as the killer instinct.
"Thank you, Uncle Paul."
David accepted his uncle's congratulations warily. They were silent, each assessing the other. They had never been easy in the other's company. They were too different in many ways, and yet in others too much alike. Always it seemed that their interests were in conflict. Paul Morgan moved across to the picture windows,
so that the daylight backlit him. It was an old trick of his to put the other person at a disadvantage. Not that we expected less of you, of course, he laughed, and David smiled to acknowledge the fact that his uncle had come close to levity. And now we must consider your future. David was silent. The choice open to you is wide, said poor Morgan, and then went on swiftly to narrow it. Though I do feel business science and law at an American university is what it should be. With this obvious goal in mind, I've used my influence to have you enrolled in my old college. Uncle Paul, I want to fly, said David softly. And poor Morgan paused. His expression changed fractionally. We're making a career decision, my boy, not expressing preferences for different types of recreation. No, sir. I mean I want to fly, as a way of life. Your life is here, within the Morgan Group. It is not something in which you have freedom of action. I don't agree with you, sir. Paul Morgan left the window and crossed to the fireplace. He selected a cigar from the humidor on the mantel, and while he prepared it, he spoke softly, without looking at David. Your father was a romantic, David. He got it out of his system by charging around the desert in a tank. It seems you've inherited this romanticism from him. He made it sound like some disgusting disease. He came back to where David sat. Tell me what you propose. I have enlisted in the Air Force, sir. You've done it? You've signed? Yes, sir. How long? 5 years. Short service commission. 5 years, Paul Morgan whispered. Well, David, I don't know what to say. You know that you're the last of the Morgans. I have no son. It'll be sad to see this vast empire without one of us at the helm. I wonder what your father would have thought of this. That's hitting low, Uncle Paul. I don't think so, David. I think you are the one who's cheating. Your trust fund is a huge block of Morgan shares and other assets given to you on the unstated understanding that you assume your duties and responsibilities. If only he would bawl me out, thought David fiercely, knowing that he was being stampeded, as Barney had warned him. If only he would order me to do it, so I could tell him to shove it. But he knew he was being manipulated by a man skilled in the art, a man whose whole life was the manipulation of men and money, in whose hands a 17-year-old boy was as soft as dough. You see, David, you're born to it. Anything else is cowardice, self-indulgence. The Morgan Group reached out its tentacles like some grotesque, flesh-eating plant to suck him in and digest him. We can have your enlistment papers annulled. It will be the matter of a single phone call. Uncle Paul, David almost shouted, trying to shut out the all-pervasive flow of words. My father, he did it. He joined the army. Yes, David, but it was different at that time. One of us had to go. He was the younger, and of course there were other personal considerations. Your mother, he let the rest of it hang for a moment, then went on. And when it was over, he came back and took his rightful place here. We miss him now, David. No one else has been able to fill the gap he left. I've always hoped that you might be the one. But I don't want to, David shook his head. I don't want to spend my life in here. He gestured at the mammoth structure of glass and concrete that surrounded them. I don't want to spend each day poring over piles of paper. It's not like that, David. It's exciting, challenging, endlessly variable. Uncle Paul, David raised his voice again, what do you call a man who fills his belly with rich food and then goes on eating? Come now, David. The first edge of irritation showed in poor Morgan's voice, and he brushed the question aside impatiently. What do you call him? David insisted. I expect that you would call him a glutton, poor Morgan answered. And what do you call a man with many millions who spends his life trying to make more? Paul Morgan froze into stillness. He stared at his ward for long seconds before he spoke. You become insolent, he said at last. No, sir, I did not mean it so. You are not the glutton, but I would be. Paul Morgan turned away and went to his desk. He sat in the high-back leather chair and lit the cigar at last.
They were silent again for a long time until at last Paul Morgan sighed.
You have to get it out of your system, the way your father did. But how I grudge you 5 wasted years.
Not wasted, Uncle Paul. I'll come out with a Bachelor of Science degree in aeronautical engineering. I suppose we'll just have to be thankful for little things like that.
David went and stood beside his chair. Thank you. This is very important to me. 5 years, David. After that, I want you.
Then he smiled slightly to signal a witticism.
At least they'll make you cut your hair.